Ireland is getting older. That presents a unique set of challenges that we, as a nation, as a population, are going to have to rise to. I'm Peter Kavanagh, and this is The Old Country, a podcast about ageing in Ireland brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland, in association with the Community Foundation, as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. Hello and welcome to The Old Country. Today I'm joined by President of Active Retirement Ireland, Anne Drury, and CEO of Active Retirement Ireland, Maureen Kavanagh, to look back on a few of the topics that we've touched on in the podcast series, and more importantly, I suppose, look forward to the future, to the rest of the decade of healthy ageing, and to let us know, to share their thoughts on what they want to see. So thank you both very much for joining us towards the end of the year. And if I could start just by asking you, we started off this podcast, I hope I might say we started it with a bang, chatting to you about the fundamentals of what makes for a healthy and active retirement. What do you feel that we need to see in the future to ensure that more people can hear that message around healthy living, how to look after yourself, everything right down to, I remember fondly our conversation about a good night's sleep and how important that is. What's the best way of getting that message out to as many people as possible?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. It's great to be here again. It was a lovely sunny day the last time I was here.
It's a little bit more wintry now.
Yes, yeah. Not too cold today, thank you. Thankfully. Yes, that's a good topic. How do we get that message out? I suppose, I think everything around revolves around education, letting people know, informing them and keeping them in the know. And I know when I spoke the last time to you, I talked a lot about, to remain healthy and to live a long, healthy life was to eat well and sleep well and exercise well, those three points. But I think people need to know about that. And I suppose the Healthy Ireland and the HSE are doing great jobs, you know, with Health Promotion Unit. And I think all Active Retirement Ireland, in our own way, were very aware of that. We had all our health festivals back in the day, a number of years ago. And it might be a good idea to revive them again. Mm. And I'm a huge advocate of health, illness prevention, so that we can. I think the most important thing about it is great to live a long life, but it's more important to live a healthy long life. Yeah. So it's quality, and to prevent all the degenerative diseases and illnesses, just to stay active. I think it's very important to have a good social life, keep your mental health healthy, well, and to keep yourself physically and mentally and socially active. Yeah. I think that's very important. And I will work with any avenue or anybody who promotes good health.
That's great. I think that argument, you know, it's about the quality, and it's not quality versus quantity, because the quality of your years will lead to, hopefully, all going well, an increased quantity in your years. Maureen, Anne touched on the social life and how important the social aspect is. And I know that I'd be preaching to converted talking to Active Retirement about that social element, that's what you do best. But there are elements out there. There are groups of older people, cohorts of older people, who don't get the opportunity to socialise, who don't get the opportunity to network. And we know exactly how dangerous loneliness can be for older people. So what can be done to ensure that these marginalised older people who are lonely, who are out there on their own, that they have the opportunity to remain active in society? And as Anne says, because it's really, really important, socialise, meet people, make friends. What can we do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Peter, because a decade or so ago, you could say that a lot of older people would have been regular churchgoers. Mm. So, for example, they would have met regularly at the church door and on the way in and on the way out and even during. Now, we don't see much of that. And particularly since COVID-19, there's been massive restrictions around that and attending services and things. So we need to think in different ways. But there are people out there reaching out into communities. There are community engagement ambassadors. There's health nurses, there are public health nurses. There are age-friendly, smart homes, people. So there are people that are out there that, you know, that can get in touch with very isolated people. I suppose what we need to do is make sure that they know that there is an alternative to staying at home, that there is a group in your community, that there is something for you to do in your community. Mm. on the other side of a thing, we do need to promote better broadband around the country, because while we, you know, getting online is very, very important, and not every older person will get online, but we need to plan for that, that we will have older people being able to do hybrid ways of socialising. They'll be meeting in person, but they'll also be online and communicating online. But we have a lot of work to do in terms of reaching very isolated rural people, particularly isolated rural men. So it is important that they know information and knowledge. That's what we need to get out there in multiple ways, so that people know there's something there for them.
And just talk to me about the scale of the challenge, just around trying to get broadband out there. Not only the infrastructure, the facilities and the ability for older people to get online, but the capacity to do it, the knowledge, the skills. Like, how big a challenge is this? I mean, there are nearly 500,000 older people in the country. I mean, there's a huge amount of them that have never turned on a computer in their lives.
Oh, there is. Just under 50% of that have never turned on a computer in their lives. Or if they have done, they haven't done it so well, and they don't use it as a tool for networking and as a tool for communicating. We've a big job to do to promote getting online within older people, particularly in the over 70s and the over 80s, because it's that cohort of people that are the least likely to go online and want to go online. And the more services that move to e-services, such as banking, the local property tax thing, take an example of that.
Yeah, that was one where it was actually incredibly difficult to find any offline way of doing that.
Absolutely. And in fairness to Catherine McGuigan and our Age Friendly programme, they did promote that very, very, very strongly, that there was an awful lot of people who were struggling to pay their property tax.
Yeah.
I mean, something you think the government would be putting out its arms for to get a few bob in, but they were making it extremely difficult for the people who do pay.
I think it's because it was already set up as a direct debit by a lot of people, so the money was going to come out one way or the other. For, you know, I think the issue was people couldn't revalue their homes easily. People couldn't get away with paying less, so maybe it's less of a surprise that the government weren't scrabbling to accommodate people.
Yeah, but Peter, there was on the other side of it, the letter wasn't exactly the friendliest letter that went out to people. It was basically telling people, if you don't change and get into your new band and find out what your new band is, you know, there was that feeling that, you know, the authorities were going to come down on top of you.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, because I think you'll remember, and I certainly remember, people getting letters. There were people getting letters either about the local property tax or about other issues regarding pensions and the likes, where just failure to communicate across the board left an awful lot of vulnerable people feeling targeted, feeling isolated, and feeling quite upset about something that they got in the post.
Yeah, and particularly when it comes to having to do something online, because what you're doing there is you're just feeding into the fear that people have that they'll do it wrong, they'll push the wrong button, they'll put in the wrong amount. Oh my God, I remember one time, it's a good few years ago, doing a tax assessment online, and I put the digit in the wrong place and ended up with a tax audit.
Oh
my God, I had to produce so much paperwork to get back out of that hole. But so that's the sort of fear that people have. But I mean, the other challenge we have is that the country needs a better infrastructure. It needs an infrastructure of broadband and connection points, and it needs an infrastructure of transport, so that even you might on one side, wouldn't it be wonderful, we have a country where in one part of your home you'll go in and you'll socialise via your laptop or your smartphone. And then on the other side, you're going to walk out the door, hop on your local transport bus and head off to the nearest town or coffee shop to meet friends, go into your local active retirement group.
That's the
vision.
Yeah.
That is it.
It's a vision. Just to stick with the idea of being online and all that, you're on the ground, as it were, and you're a member of an active retirement group as well as president of the whole organisation. Is the picture getting better? The people who are joining in the last number of years, would they have more of a comfort and a skill set around computers than those who've been around for years?
I think so, Peter. And I suppose, you know, I started using computers about 30 years ago myself. But I do find that more people are using technology to communicate. More people are on. I think the WhatsApp really brought people, the smartphone and the use of WhatsApp. And particularly during COVID, a lot of people started to use smartphones. I think they, you know, their families helped them because, you know, for a lot of our members who were maybe socially isolated as we were in the very beginning, maybe for people living alone, they needed that help. And I know a lot of our groups, and it's very noticeable when you go around to ours or when we go to the regional meetings, technology is so important. And when we're talking about how our members supported each other during COVID, WhatsApp and messages, messaging and the jokes and keeping in contact, that was a huge part of
putting a smile on someone's face. Yeah, yes, it's a huge part of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I also find, too, that more people are using email now than and I think with our newest programme, with our High Digital, I think that would really be part of it, is to get everybody online as much as possible and to get everybody communicating by email or WhatsApp or Zoom or whatever way. So I think this programme that we're launching very soon in the new year, I think that'll be wonderful for our members. And I really genuinely hope that they do take the opportunity to upskill.
Yeah.
You know, because it'll be so empowering and enabling for them.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Maureen said, you know, they can communicate, you know, either via the technology or then they can meet in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's all part of the bigger picture, you know, encouraging people to communicate with each other. And there's only so much that you can do as a non-governmental organisation. An awful lot of this is relating, Maureen, to the building blocks that have to be put in place. The infrastructure, everything like that. We heard 2 weeks ago on the podcast with Dr. Emer Coveney from Age Friendly Ireland talking about the role that local authorities play and how the picture is getting better, the development of the Age Friendly programme and the likes. But as we look forward to the next 10 years, or well, 9 years, I suppose, that we have left in the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing, what do you think are the priorities that this government, the next government, are going to have to put in place to build that vision, to help you, your organisation, achieve that vision?
I think COVID-19 pandemic has shown us the failures that there's been in policies, systems, services for all of us as we age. That's across the world. That isn't just in Ireland, to be honest with you. And I think the Decade of Healthy Ageing, 2021 to 2030, is an ideal opportunity for Ireland to reframe how it looks at ageing. So in 2013, the National Positive Ageing Strategy was published and developed nearly 10 years ago. It's time for another one. It is time for the government to have a look at how do we approach healthy ageing across the generations. So it's not just about how do we have policies, services and systems in place for this cohort of older people, but for the younger generations coming up. And I think with the opportunity is in front of us, and what we need to do it is in order to reframe aging and to look at it from an intergenerational life course approach to healthy and positive aging, we need leadership, we need voice and engagement of older people, and certainly Active Retirement Ireland with its members and its infrastructure at local level can provide and support that. We also need connecting the stakeholders. We need cross-departmental approach to ageing. It's not just a health issue. Yeah. It's not just a social welfare issue. And we need research and data to back up the cost of ageing, the true cost of ageing for all of us into the future. It's an ideal opportunity for the government now to provide the leadership around this.
And one thing about lobbying government, Anne, is that when you're talking about older people, it's a cohort that votes, very politically active, very politically motivated. Do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic has shown older people that perhaps they could be a little bit more respected, a little bit more looked after by a potential next government, and that perhaps they might have their say at the ballot box?
I definitely do. And I think the COVID highlighted a lot of issues around ageing. And in particular, I suppose during COVID, when older people had to stay in their back gardens and move around, I think that highlighted I suppose one of the big things that it highlighted for me, that we were just not one homogenous group. The aging, you know, in Active Retirement, we have members from 50 onwards or maybe younger, to members who are in their 90s. So aging takes over, it takes, you know, encompasses all that, those 4 or 5 decades. And that's a huge It's a lifetime.
It's kind of silly when you look at it in that context. It's kind of silly that it's not only seen as a single department issue, but that department is health. Mm-hmm. That it's seen about. It's continuously seen about like an issue within the Department of Health. Where is the acknowledgement? You might say that older people need transport. They need sport, culture, heritage. Yeah. They need, obviously, health is important. Mm-hmm. It's maybe the most important department, but all of the other, and that joined up thinking doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we consider aging, we do equate it with health services. Mm-hmm. But as you've just pointed out there, it's much broader than that. And I think Maureen mentioned transport, and I think transport is so important for people, for everybody in the country, but older people who may not be driving or have mobility issues, it's very important that they can afford to get to travel or have the access to timely services. And one of the things I would say about health, that we all need to access the health service, but one of the issues that I find recently is timely access to health services. And I think this really showed up during COVID. Mm. And particularly when the hospitals and services were under pressure, and with, you know, older people maybe having their appointments cancelled, you know, I think we really do need to look at our health services. I think the pandemic showed that what we can do when we're under pressure. Mm. If we continue to look after everybody when we're not under pressure, see what we can do with our services. But one of the main issues that keeps arising in conversations I'm having with older people is access and affordability of health services.
That's something that does crop up again. Because Maureen, I know that you've made it sort of a point that Active Retirement has argued time and time again. There are a lot of services, and let's go with even just health as an example. There are a lot of services that used to be free for older people. The coins simply aren't anymore. And the pension has not really increased to the point where that's acceptable, you know, in the day to day.
Yeah, you look at, we know that, you know, there used to be the universal entitlement to the medical card when you're over 70. That was abolished in 2008. And although there was a massive protest, it wasn't ever reversed. The decision was watered down a bit, but certainly the universal entitlement wasn't there. But even if you are in receipt of a medical card as an older person, there are services and that you have to pay for, like blood tests, smear tests. There's other areas that if you're over the age of 69, 70 as a woman, you're no longer entitled to the free mammogram, the breast check. So if you want to make sure that you're healthy, you need to go and pay for that yourself. So it's these sort of things that, you know, they might seem like they're anomalies, but what they add up to is that as we age, not being able to access things that could keep us well and healthy and in the long run save the government lots and lots of money.
Yeah, makes a difference.
Yeah, that's the kind of the sensible part of it, like why we should take that life course approach, why we should look at it. When we spoke to Emer Coveney, and in fact, it's come up a couple of times on the show, talking to Professor Kieran Walsh, talking to Patricia Conway as well. When you plan for an ageing population, you benefit all generations right across the way. Like if we were to go and do one of the things that Age Friendly Ireland does, a walkability audit, if we're to go around Multifarnham or any town in Ireland and say how walkable is this for older people, it benefits those who have a disability, it benefits those who are pushing a buggy around. And likewise, if we start planning accurately and properly for an ageing population, we benefit everyone across all the generations.
That's right. And I've taken part in a walkability study.
Have you?
In Collinstown is trying to be the first age-friendly town in Westmeath. And I did that 2 years ago. And we had the politicians there as well. We had one of our local county councillors. And I think he actually was blindfolded. On the day. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and
brave
we did,
man.
Yeah. But as he said, he did experience what it was like if you were blind and you needed to get around. So, yeah. So that was wonderful. And it highlighted a number of badly needed things in the town. I was just talking to one of my friends there lately, and a lovely footpath has been built as a result of that.
Oh, that's excellent. It's good to see these theories become practice.
That's
it's great
right.
to see it
yeah.
actually apply. There's a lot more of that obviously has to happen over the next number of years if we're to get any real return from a UN decade that focuses on healthy aging. So Maureen, if you had your way, if you're looking back, 2031, it's all finished, UN decade of healthy aging has been a success. What does that look like to you?
What that looks like to me is that we wouldn't be sitting here talking about aging mm-hmm. being an issue, that it would be so inbuilt into support services policies that it would be the life through an utter life course approach, that looking at aging would be from the literally from the cradle to the grave type of issue, and that it wouldn't be a separate issue, and that also we would never ever be having the conversation that getting old is a burden.
Do you feel that that's something that we hear far too often, Anne? That
yes,
getting
definitely,
old is being
yes,
framed as a burden.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And I think that's a mindset, and that's a mindset that needs to be changed. And I think Maureen is so right there. I remember being at a seminar a good few years ago, and I said, we're all aging from the day we're born.
Yeah.
And if we had the services that we need to support people at every age.
Yeah.
So that when it comes to older age, you know, that you do have all those services. I think it's a mindset that needs to be changed. It's an attitude change. And to that older people are very active, you know, as we are in active retirement Ireland. We're very busy people. My children say to me, you're never at home, Mum. I think when they said to me, when I retired, one of my sons said to me, Mum, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I have lots of things to do, but how do you pass your day?
Yeah.
I think they thought I might be at home sitting down doing nothing. But I'm, you know, so I do think it's, and I said this to you, it's to prepare for older age as well and look after your health and keep well. And then so when it does come along that you're ready for it.
Just on the subject of ageist attitudes. How much of it, or I don't know if that can be quantified, but maybe a better way of framing the question would be, is a lot of it ingrained? Do older people, the people that you work with on a daily basis, do they carry a lot of this, internalise a lot of this, and does that bear out, Maureen?
Yeah, ageism is the last ism that actually still exists and is ingrained in every single one of us. And much and all, as we try to halt ourselves and think, try and rise above it, it is ingrained in all of us because there hasn't been enough awareness raising around it across the ages. I mean, it is the last ism that needs to be challenged, and it's the biggest ism at the moment because it's the one that's impacting mostly on all of us and has the potential. And actually, we know it has the greatest impact on that third stage of our lives.
Yeah. You know? which, as you say, is something that affects everybody. Like, obviously, racism is terrible. It's pervasive. We haven't solved that. But
there's a lot of awareness around it now, and people tend to be careful
around
it.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? And in fairness, with ageism, I mean, we must remember it is one of the nine grounds.
Yeah, it has that legal protection.
Absolutely, but it doesn't seem to get the same cover that gender issues do and that racism does, disability. So ageism needs to be moved up a bit in terms of the nine grounds and seriously challenged.
One of the things, Anne, that I suppose one of the issues around that is that when we hear anything to do with ageism in the news, it's usually employment related. You know, somebody told that they have to leave a job after a certain stage. We don't tend to hear too much of the other forms of ageism that go in society. Is it therefore something that could go under the radar that not a lot of people might pay attention to?
I think so. I think as Maureen said, we've all internalised it. I think we need to work harder at it. And I this was something that I would like to do for the remainder of my presidency of Active Retirement Ireland is to concentrate and maybe to do something about ageism. It does go under the radar. And I must say, I am very conscious of it now as the leader of a national organisation of older people. It's constantly to the forefront of my mind, and particularly in language, how we, you know, the language we use, how. So, yes, I think there's a huge amount of work to be done. There's something that I certainly would love to do and get involved in. And and particularly since that report telling us like it is was published some in the summer, that really showed up how important it is to combat ageism.
That report that came out over the summer, telling it like it is, that was kind of a landmark moment, really, in trying to bring ageism to the fore, Maureen.
It was. I mean, it was intended to tell the stories of how older people fared and those silent vices of older people who were cocooned at the time, even though we don't use that word anymore. And it did tell the story, and it told a story of heartbreak, recovery, resilience, everything that older people are in this country. And I think to move that story on and to do that story justice, Anne is right, we need to work on that. And ageism has been at the core of a lot of the gaps in services and policies. Mm. But I think, I was just listening to Anne there and I thought, wow, you know, 2023 sees Active Retirement Ireland celebrate 45 years of existence from the first one in Dunleary set up in 1978, February 1978. And maybe, Anne, we should think about, you know, having a theme of combating ageism for maybe the year of 2023, given that it'll be 10 years since the Positive Ageing Strategy was published. Not implemented, published.
That's a great idea, Maureen.
Delighted you could use the podcast as a planning session for that.
Of course.
It's amazing what happens when you converse. But I do think that it's important that telling it like it is. I'm sending that to everybody and anybody in my circle. I've shared with my age-friendly council in Westmeath. I've sent it on to, I'm involved in a few other studies. I was involved there recently in a co-design of a healthcare plan for older people.
Oh, excellent.
And I've sent it on to some of the doctors and medical professionals involved in that. So I think it's just about getting the word out there. And I have shared it with PPN. I've shared it with everybody and anybody who in any way is involved in working with older people. I think
it's up on the Active Retirement Ireland website in case anybody wants to get their hands
absolutely
on it.
Absolutely, yes.
Really, one of the key things that you actually mentioned earlier on, Maureen, when you were talking about, you know, what it looks like if this decade of healthy aging is successful, one of the key things was the involvement of older people themselves and this core concept that I want us hopefully to finish up on, which is nothing about us without us. How important is that as we strive for an age-friendly future, a non-ageist future, that there's real and meaningful participation by older people themselves?
Well, I will go back to telling it like it is, because who can tell it better than the people that are experiencing that part of their lives? And if we don't plan and co-design at all levels of society, the walkability studies, for example, is a co-design for local areas and local age-friendly environments. We are bringing in a co-design for the High Digital program, which is a digital skills program for older people, delivered by older people. Older people as peers and ambassadors within this. Active Retirement Ireland itself is led by the very members that drive and push this organisation to the fore. Co-design is really, really important. Co-design helps policymakers understand what it is about, you know, growing older and what it's like to grow older. So, yes, absolutely. Cannot be without older people. So it is definitely let older people tell it as it is.
We'll have to leave it there. That's it for the show and indeed for the series. My thanks to Andrew and Maureen Kavanagh and
to all
of you for joining us along the way. Whatever the future holds, I wish you peace and prosperity. And hopefully we'll get to talk again.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
The Old Country is recorded in the podcast studios, McGuinness Place, Dublin 2. For more information, check out thepodcaststudios.ie. This podcast is brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. This podcast is supported by the Community Foundation for Ireland, and thanks, as always, to our media partners, Alice PR.